Welcome to the healing power of your dreams on UK Health Radio. I'm Teresa Chung, dream decoder, spiritual growth expert, and your guide to the hidden wisdom of your inner world. Each week, we explore how your nighttime dreams, daydreams, and waking intuitions hold powerful messages for healing, insight, manifesting, and personal transformation. Even just by listening each week, you'll start tuning in more deeply to your own inner voice, waking up with greater clarity, purpose, a sense of connection to the invisible strings in your life, and dreams and gratitude for them on your mind. So join me weekly, live or on demand, and just like a dream, expect the unexpected. The whisper of one memorable dream can echo louder than a thousand realities. Hello, you're listening to the Healing Power of Your Dreams on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. Teresa here, and I'm honoured to be your weekly recurring dream host. I've spent decades exploring the language of dreams, and if you'd like to explore my dream credentials, you can visit teresachung.com. I'm best known for my many best-selling non-fiction titles on dreams and spiritual growth, but I've recently written my debut novel, Nightborn, a thriller that doubles as an undercover crash course in dream decoding for those who don't enjoy non-fiction. And if you are curious about how dreams can help you navigate the often upside-down world of intimate relationships, my next title, Your Twin Flame Journey, A Guide to Your Soul's Most Passionate and Transformative Relationship, is available for pre-order ahead of its publication by Godsfield in February 26. Now, if you'd like to share a dream or a reflection with me, you can email this show at dreampowerhealing@gmail.com. I aim to respond there to everyone, or live, as I'm going to do right now, to this message from Laura, and I'm just called to share it. Here it is. Teresa, I often dream I'm talking with dead relatives and friends, and in the dream it feels like they have never died, and then I wake up and feel like crying. Sometimes in the dream I can hear them and they give life advice. Sometimes I can't hear them at all. What is happening in my mind while I sleep? I would love it if you could read this out, as I know many other people experience afterlife dreams. Laura, what you're describing here is a deeply spiritual reality, one that many highly sensitive people have. In these dreams, the veil feels thinner and spiritual love and guidance are reaching you. Sometimes the wisdom comes through clearly in the dream, but other times it's more silent because not all spiritual guidance is meant to be heard. Some is just meant to be felt in the dream state and then carried into your waking life later. The dream underlines that death ends a life, but not in a relationship. Those kind of afterlife dreams are a sign that you are watched over, gently guided by angels as you sleep, and that you are never truly alone. Trust and don't fear those dreams, Laura. They arrive exactly as they're meant to. Thank you, Laura. And just as dreams arrive exactly as they are meant to for the dreamer, I believe it is no accident you are all tuning into this waking dream of a show right now. Listen carefully to what lies ahead, as you are meant to be listening and to carry today's dream power wisdom within you. And today's show turns the nightlight on storytelling. Dreams are the stories from the book your soul is writing about you. Every night, without fail, those stories arrive. Even if you don't recall them, they still happen. Your dreaming mind sends them with purpose to awaken feeling, problem solve, ignite creativity, and gently guide you towards inside-out healing. That's the healing power of your dreams. And it all begins with the courage to feel and to dream with your eyes wide shut and wide open. Dreams speak in stories because stories move us in ways facts never can. They bypass logic and speak directly to the emotional intelligence of the heart. That's why dreams have inspired some of the world's greatest books and films. Did you know that the first sci-fi novel, Frankenstein, was born from a dream? And countless creative works since then began as fleeting night visions, waiting to see daylight. Later in this special th show, I'm thrilled to welcome BAFTA award-winning screenwriter Geoff Thompson, who has exclusively shared his award-winning short story with UK Health Radio. It's powerfully narrated by former Doctor Who, of course it would be Doctor Who because it's outside time and timeless, Christopher Eccleston. This beautifully animated waking dream is deeply moving, and you'll hear it later on in the programme, and you can watch it already on UK Health Radio's socials. Dreams truly are a limitless source of creativity. No wonder artists and creatives use them for inspiration, and if you've ever felt blocked or creatively stuck, just writing down a recent dream is one of the most powerful and underrated creativity tools there is. It activates your imagination, sharpens your intuition, and awakens compassion. Research shows that people who are moved by stories tend to be more empathetic. So when you reflect on your dreams, you're not just becoming more creative by doing so, you're becoming more human. Sensitivity, despite what you may have been told, is not a weakness, it is a strength. And with that in mind, I'm delighted to introduce today's special guest, someone who truly embodies the healing power of both storytelling and compassion. She's a self-confessed, highly sensitive soul. A former ITV This Morning producer, Sunday Times reporter, described by the likes of Chesney Hawkes as the best journalist he's ever met, and I concur. And you'll soon be able to see her, if you're over here in the UK, on The One Show in January, talking about intuitive parenting. Please welcome Margarita Mitchell-Pollock to UK Health Radio. She's a clear, gentle voice showing us why sensitivity, storytelling, and listening to your dreams is the new strong. Hello, Margarita. Hi.
Hello, thank you so much for such a beautiful welcome, Teresa. You are such a beautiful soul. That was wonderful. Thank you.
Oh, well, I'm just over the moon that you're here, and you do describe yourself as highly sensitive, and we connect on that in so many ways. But what does that mean for you? When did you first realize you were highly sensitive? And what do you think is the most misunderstood about this trait? There's a lot of questions there. So basically, what does it mean to you being highly sensitive? When did you first realize you were? And why do people so misunderstand what being highly sensitive means?
So to quote Lady Gaga, I was pretty much born this way. To be honest, I think many of us highly sensitives are. I came into the world as a sensitive soul from a very young age. I mean, I was that child that was kind of the woo-woo child. My mother wasn't quite sure what to do with me at first. I was just sensitive to everything around me. Songs, empathy. I wanted to heal the world. I wanted to heal animals, people. And I found it all very overwhelming. So I think that I've learned to navigate the sensitivity by my mother helping me realizing it's a strength. I think there's a lot at the moment where people think that sensitivity means that we're like crying in a corner or something, you know, covering ourselves in blankets because we can't quite take the world. But actually, sensitive souls are, in my opinion, the strongest souls because we've had to be. We feel everything. Not only do we feel our own emotions, we feel other people's emotions. And when we connect with people, even on the bus, you know, the train, we can feel a lot of what they're going through with the empathetic side of our nature. To have that and to navigate life, you have to be strong. You know, I was saying to you recently, Teresa, on our chat, that we would have been the shamans in our community. You know, we in a camp, not just the wise women or wise men, we would have been the ones that would have been navigating the foresight of what's coming, to know what danger lies ahead. And we would have been the ones foreseeing that. And that is a superpower. You know, we would have been the ones, maybe not out with spears, but we were internally, maybe in the hut, gathered around a fire, seeing what was to come to protect our tribe, our community, and our family. So to answer your question, I think that the sensitivity we have, I'm so passionate about the fact that it's a strength and not to see it as a weakness in our children as well. You know, because as a child, I was often labelled, oh, you know, maybe shy or quiet. And I really want to change that on its head because actually we're the ones that we see and we sense everything. And to do that and to navigate this life, you have to be strong because you've been chosen to be this way. In my opinion, for a reason. We're here for a reason and we feel everything, and that is strength.
Beautiful. And many highly sensitive people, and I'm sure you're no exception, receive guidance through their dreams by night, their intuition by day. Why do you think sensitivity and dreaming are so closely linked? And can you share a dream or intuitive moment that helped guide or heal you?
Yes, I mean, I strongly believe that your intuition can save your life. It saved my life on many occasions, just navigating. I think we're given an extra degree of help on this earth if we're born sensitive, if you're born as empathetic. And I believe that that comes in the form of dreams, and your intuition in waking life too. So I think that's a way that we're given to navigate like some of the hurdles that we can go through in life. If you're a sensitive soul, it's a nudge from the universe, it's help from our guides to say, you know what, this situation might be on the corner, might be about to arise, it's going to be difficult, but we're going to give you the tools to navigate that. And you can have that through precognition in your dreams, nudges, intuition. You know, it doesn't even have to be as elaborate as that. Sometimes you might get a feel for somebody in your life, and your subconscious antenna, your psychic antenna, are picking it up, but you're not aware of it in your waking life. And then you go to sleep, and then your kind of intuition taps you on the shoulder, and it says, "Hello, sensitive soul. This person's not quite right for you, or this job's not quite right for you, and you know it. But we're just going to make sure that you hear this loud and clear, so when you wake up, you're much more aware of what lays ahead for you." I mean, I've had precognition in my dreams. I kept dreaming. I just given birth to my first baby boy, and I remember vividly pushing him around the park, and I kept having this recurring dream that I was going to work at this morning. It doesn't feel like it felt like a kind of like, oh yes, that would be lovely, wouldn't it? A wish fulfillment dream. And I remember ringing my mum, like, I am having this constant recurring dream that I'm working at this morning, and I've just had this baby, and I have no idea how this is going to happen. I don't think it is going to happen. Maybe I'm just dreaming of some other career while I'm, you know, baby's crying and it was so tiring. And she said, "Well, see what happens." And I was like, "I don't know, Mum, I don't know." And then it kept coming, it kept knocking on the door. "Apply for a job at this morning, apply for a job at this morning." And I thought, this is ridiculous. I mean, there wasn't a week going by where I wasn't dreaming this. So in the end, I did. I did do it. I sent off the application, and then I had another dream. "Oh, you have to go and you have to email the editor. You have to email the news editor, and you have to say hello." And I was like, "Oh, for goodness sake, I've sent my application. What can I do? I've left it to the universe." But there's a part of me that knew, actually, I'm getting this guidance, and there's a reason for it. And I would always say that if you have got a recurring dream, please pay attention, because something is knocking on your door. And as I said, I believe that sensitive souls are given an extra layer, an extra gift to help us navigate this life, which isn't easy. And I do think things like dreams, intuition, nudges from the universe are there to help us. And, you know, long story short, I did end up getting that job at this morning, and working as a news producer, exactly like I saw in my dream 4 years prior to when I had my baby, and then met Teresa Chung, one of my idols in my life and a huge inspiration throughout my teenage and 20s, whose books I adore. And there she was sitting in the green room of this morning, and everything aligned and came, and it was like a premonition and a precognition, and all at once I was like, okay, I'm glad that I followed my intuition here. Thank you.
Well, I knew you from way back when you worked for a magazine here in the UK called Prediction as well. You were a journalist for that. That was one of your early starts. And it was funny actually because we had so much to talk about that it was almost annoying to have to go and do the item. I wanted
Yes,
to
I
stay
remember that.
talking to you. But to get for people listening who think, well, I'm not very intuitive. I don't recall my dreams. There is a scale of sensitivity in that. And I know that you reference because you are researching and writing a book soon to come out, Dr. Elaine Aron's very well-known research into highly sensitive people, where there is a kind of a scale. Love your thoughts on Dr. Elaine Aron, but also people who are lower on the scale, who maybe don't think they're intuitive or have vivid dream recall. There are self-help techniques, aren't they, can activate that, because when they do actually activate their sensitivity, they have clearer messages. Because I think if you're very, very highly sensitive, sometimes there's so much coming in, it can be hard to know what is you should really follow and what not. And I believe one of the tools for people who are less sensitive is meditation, isn't it?
Yes.
And then when they awaken spiritually, in some ways, the guidance they get is clearer. So wherever you are on the scale, It's good. Just you know how to work with it, and we've all got it within us. That's what I'm saying. It's in our DNA to be sensitive. Sorry, please share your thoughts on the psychology about it and the research,
No,
Doctor.
I absolutely completely agree with you. I think the thing is with the scale, I was just thinking there that because I have two small children, so I know how hard it is to sit down and meditate. Many times I've had broken sleep, so I haven't recalled my dreams recently. And I think that if you feel like you're a person that does, you doesn't have these vivid dreams, you meditate, nothing comes, I would say find your tool. And what is your tool? That is might be going for a walk in nature. Not everybody feels, at home sitting down on, a yoga mat for half an hour a day. You don't have time. So find what it is that speaks to you. Is it being in nature? Is it being among the trees? Is it just taking some time out listening to a podcast like this one where you have an inspirational speaker who has walked their talk and can kind of lift your vibration and give you food for thought? And then that sparks something creative. Is it writing down in a dream journal or even just writing a free flow of your thoughts? Is it using some sort of kind of angel cards or Teresa's fantastic dream cards, something that you can use that taps into your intuition and that speaks to you, because what works for you is what's going to open that door. When you're tired, you've got stress, and life is hard, and you can't hear that inner voice. You need to find a way that you can quiet everything around you and tune into you. It doesn't come in a big bang. There's not always a big, this is a sign from the universe. It sometimes it speaks in whispers. Oftentimes it speaks in whispers, in fact. And it's learning how to listen to that whisper and then amplifying it. And also, I'd say there's an element of self-love there too, because there's been many times in my life when I've had that whisper and I've ignored it. I've quietened that voice because I didn't want to hear it. I didn't want to hear maybe the red flag about a friend or a person in a relationship. So there has to be an element of loving yourself enough to allow yourself to hear when there is a warning bell, when there is an intuitive nudge. Because if you don't love yourself, you might not apply for that job. You might not leave that abusive relationship. You might not cut ties with the toxic friendship. So it's not just about learning how to listen, it's about following through when you do.
Couldn't agree more. And of course, if you are very sensitive and you're getting very empathetic as well, you will be absorbing things from other people. And that can be quite hard for someone who is highly sensitive. What do you advise about protecting yourself emotionally? And I know you're the best person to ask because you live and work in the tough world of media, TV, where I mean you have to have your protection there. So please share how you protect yourself emotionally, because I'm sure some of the work you do is quite harrowing.
Yes, it absolutely is. I mean, I don't know if your viewers are familiar with This Morning, but we have a lot of fantastic content which is geared towards crime. So we do a lot of stories. We had a lot of stories where people have been through tragedies, awful things that have happened to them, and we're shining a spotlight on that, and we're bringing an awareness to that person's story, which is a hugely valuable part of the work that I do. I think sometimes I could spend hours and hours a day trawling through stories that just make my heart ache, to be honest. There's times when I've been in tears at 6 in the morning, trying to get through the news. But I think that realizing, if you're in a position like me, you work in the media, the power of storytelling is what, for me, why I'm doing this. Bringing that person to the TV, putting them on in a newspaper or a magazine, telling the world their story, that's why I'm there. That's why I've chosen to do this. I am the person, the bridge, that means that I've seen a fantastic story. I need the world to know about this lady, this man, and what's happened to them so other people can be helped through that. That for me is the power of storytelling. And that means I can never switch off my sensitivity. I can never do that really completely. But it means that I can sometimes quieten it slightly so I can see the story and the power, the ripple effect it would have once I bring it to the public. And that passion fuels me. For those that work in media, I'm sure you feel the same if you're sensitive. For those that don't work in media and the news is horrendous and it's heartbreaking, I would say that there's a time and place to consume certain media. Maybe not first thing in the morning if you're very sensitive, because it can be quite a lot. The first time you wake up or last night, you're very sensitive, very open. So I'll say there's a time and a place to consume news, first of all. Make sure you're in a good place with yourself mentally as well. If you're having a terrible day, it might not be the right time to open that app and read about the atrocities in the world. The second thing that always helps me is to realize I'm not omnipotent. I'm not God. And I, as much as I want to heal everybody I read about or go out and do something about it, I can't always do that. We can't always help. So what I do is I hand it over. I hand it over to a higher power, to whatever you believe in. For me, that's God. And I say, please help this person. So I think when I can do nothing and I feel paralyzed in the state of the world, I hand it over and I pray for that person or the people that's been affected. And I realize that I can only do so much in that moment. And maybe there's more I can do by helping an organization. But for that moment, if I can't tell that person's story and bring it to the world, I offer up a prayer and hope and send good energy. I'm a huge believer in sending good energy to people.
Thank
People don't always believe that, but there really is power in just sending good intentions to others.
to your friends and your enemies. And well, this is so gripping. Thank you, Margarita. But we do have to go to an ad break. So hold that dream, everyone. I'll meet you on the other side.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, aunt and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Dreamscape, and I'm here with Margarita Mitchell-Polak. She's such a wise soul. We could listen to her for hours. I find myself just wanting to cross my legs and sit at your feet and listen, Margarita. So thank you. We've talked about being highly sensitive. We've talked about the power of storytelling to move us, and also music too. I would love you to talk about the power of music to heal us from the inside out, as well as dreams, and also then to talk about your music choice for this show, Margarita, why you want UK Health Radio listeners to hear it right now and what it means to you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Teresa. Thank you for letting me choose this song. I thought carefully about this song because obviously it's Christmas time. I love Christmas. I'm sure that everybody is hearing the Christmas songs all over the radio. But I felt this was my alternative Christmas message, my alternative Christmas song, which is Good Song by Good Job by Alicia Keys. This is a song that spoke to me and many people during the pandemic when I'd just had a baby. I feel like at the moment, Christmas means a lot to many people, but can also be a very difficult time. You have bereavements, you've got people that are estranged, we've got the cost of living crisis, we've got things in the news that are, heartbreaking. We all need a reminder, I feel, for this Christmas that you're doing a good job. And I want people to listen to the lyrics of this song wherever you are. You're in your car, you're listening at home, you're on YouTube, or however you're tuning in. And I really want this song to be my message to you and from the universe that you are doing a fantastic job, that you matter, your life matters, and whatever you're going through right now, keep going, okay? Because the only way out is through. Go through this and get to the other side because you're doing a fantastic job. And if no one else says this to you today, let me and Alicia Keys say it to you on this fantastic Teresa Chung podcast. You're doing a good job. Your life matters. Keep going.
Thank you. as my hero. I see your light in the dark, smile in my face when we all know it's hard. There's no way to ever pay you back. Bless your heart, no, I love you for that. Honest and selfless, I don't know if this helps it, but good job, you're doing a good job, a good job. You're doing a good job, don't get too down. The world needs you now, know that you matter, 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 yeah. You're doing a good job, a good job. You're doing a good job, don't get too down. The world needs you now, know that you matter, 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 yeah. 6 in the morning, as soon as you walk through that door, everyone needs you again. The world's out of order, it's not a sound when you're not around. All day on your feet, harder, keep that energy, I know. When it feels like the end of the road, you don't let go, you just press forward. You're the engine that makes all things go. Always in disguise, my hero. I see a light in the dark, smile at my face when we all know it's hard. There's no way to ever pay you back. Bless your heart, no, I love you for that. Honest and selfless, I don't know if this helps it, but good job, you're doing a good job, a good job, good job. You're doing a good job, don't get too down. The world needs you now, know that you matter, matter, matter. Yeah, it's a good job, you're doing a good job, a good job,
good job.
Good job, everyone listening. And I'm delighted to say we moved to the part of the show which is wildly unpredictable, just like your dreams. This is where we expect the unexpected, but in a very good way. And when I said Margarita was going to be here today, I had so many people wanting to speak to you, Margarita. But someone that my intuition said you needed to connect was a lady called Futuala. I hope I'm pronouncing that correct, Futuala. Is it? Please.
Futuala.
Thank you, because you are a shaman, and you've written books about shamanism and healing traditions. And dreams are often viewed as sacred messages, aren't they, in the shamanistic tradition? So how, in your opinion, do dreams and story work together for you as sources of guidance and transformation? And do say who you are before you answer that question as well.
So I'm Futuala Dreamy, and as you said, Teresa, I'm the author of 2 books, and my work is twofold. One part of my work is the ancient Egyptian mysteries, the myths and stories there, and I'm also a teacher of shamanism and nature-based spirituality. So dreams and stories are a part of our inspiration in shamanism, and we can ask for a guiding dream and we can receive the answer in our dreams. We just have to have a very strong intention that may I receive the answer to my problem in my dream. We let go of that problem, and then we see what comes, or we can ask for healing. So people sometimes receive healing in a dream where they feel that even a condition, emotional condition or mental condition, could actually find that they are much better, or they find the deeper cause in a dream. But my work also is a little bit deeper. So in my second book, which is Sacred Mysticism of Egypt, The Ancient Path of Heka Initiation, it was just published 3 months ago by O Books. I tried to look into the human predicament and look at the stories and myths and what these people thousands of years ago worked with stories.
You have a question for Margarita about storytelling in the media and everything. And I can see we're also joined from our American recurring dream here as well, Kelly Sullivan Walden, Dr. Dream, author of Dreamerfesting. Getting all very exciting. I can feel this collective dream energy. But please, please do ask Margarita a question.
So I would love to ask you, Margarita, about the power of story in your work and how you think story can lead us to discover, if we wish, that we ourselves are beings of kindness and compassion, and that no matter what we may have done until this moment, that we have the power to choose a kinder narrative for ourselves and for our world as well.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your question and congratulations on your recent book as well. Fantastic.
Thank you.
So thank you for this question. The first thing that sprang to mind actually is a story that I wrote for The Telegraph. It was a few years ago now, but I think it's important to mention now because it happened on Boxing Day, the Boxing Day tsunami, to be exact. I found a lady online and talking about the power of story again. I knew that I needed to bring this lady's story to the public. The minute I heard it, it was incredibly powerful. So this lady had actually gone to Sri Lanka to end her life. Actually, she decided to end her life. She was suffering with depression and she had flown out there for Christmas and she intended to spend Christmas Day there, Boxing Day, and maybe that was her plan then. So she obviously went there, and on the morning of Boxing Day, as we all know, with the tsunami that came, she found that the water started flooding in to this little hut that she was on the beach. And she heard the screaming behind her, and she woke up, and as the water started to engulf her, she started to feel like she wanted to fight for her life when she went there to end it. And she had a choice. The water was, she was drowning. And she found that she, within her, she started to fight with every, her words, every strength of an ounce of strength she had to stay alive. And she managed to get to the top of the hut and kind of get some air. And then I think at one point the door broke, or a dam broke in the door, and she was able to kind of swim out and find a tree. And she clung to the tree for hours and hours before she was rescued. She was an ex-BBC reporter, actually. And she hung there, and she was able to contact the BBC to get help to rescue her and many other people. I think she rescued over 100 people in the end. But the BBC came and they sent help. But my point being is that the power of that story, like, wow, somebody that feels like she wanted to end her life is transformed by the tsunami and then clings on for dear life and survives and realizes she wants to live. And that's a true story. That's not made up. This happened. She's writing a book about it, actually. And I'll send you the link, Therese, if people want to have a look in the show notes afterwards. That, for me, the power of story, transformative. You know, that's fiction in its storytelling and myth, powerful, but also the reality of the fact that this woman lived this story, this is real, like, that is transformative. And if you're having a bad day and you hear a song like Alicia Keys, or you hear a story, you read that in the Telegraph that day, on that Boxing Day when it was published, imagine how that might impact you if you're at your lowest ebb. So for me, that's the power of storytelling. It can not only change your life, it could save your life.
And change and save your life and make you feel deeply and make you rethink. And it couldn't be a better moment now to bring in. I've got goosebumps. Jeff Thompson is here. Hello. He's best known as a BAFTA-winning screenwriter and also Times best-selling author. For listeners meeting him or hearing him for the first time, Jeff, thank you for joining this conversation about the power of storytelling and compassion. Could you briefly share who you are?
My name's Jeff Thompson. I'm a writer, but that was a really powerful story. But it reminds me of when a writer came to me. If you don't mind a quick diversion, a writer came to me. I met him in BAFTA, and he was struggling. He said he was struggling to make money, and he'd lost his way with his writing. And I said, "Come with me," and I took him down to St. James's Church. Mm-hmm. And all down the left aisle of St. James's Church is filled with rough sleepers. I mean, like dozens and dozens. They let them sleep there. And I walked up and down the aisle with him and said, why do you think these kids are here? And he says, I don't know. I said, because they've heard the wrong story. I said, our job, don't worry about the money, that'll come. And don't worry about validation, we don't need that. Our job is to tell them the right story. Then it will be intercessional. It will land, hopefully, hundreds of years after we've gone, certainly in places that we will never visit or never know about. Someone can read our story, and that ripple will go out and touch innumerable other people. So everyone in that building had heard the wrong story, believed the wrong story, and acted on the wrong story, and they ended up sleeping rough in St. James's Church. I said to him, this is where William Blake, one of the greatest storytellers of all time, was christened, in this church in Piccadilly. I said, and he walked up and down these streets. And I said, if you think that he didn't have the same worries and the same concerns and the same doubts about his own stories, you're mistaken. I said, anybody that's called to bring forward a creative oeuvre is going to be challenged. There are going to be challenges, and those challenges are necessary, because they get churned up in the volition of the work. But I said, your raison d'etre to do the stories so that kids don't end up in places like this. We can change their lives with a story. So true.
Thank you. And Jeff, you've recently released a short story as an animation called An Angel on Oxford Street, which feels very much like a modern waking dream. It's tender, unexpected, and deeply human. What was the spark behind this story? I think you've kind of explained it already in your previous discussion. But what do you hope people who listen to An Angel on Oxford Street or watch it, what do you want people to feel or recognise in themselves?
I want them to be able to, I mean, it's a reportage, so it's what actually happened to me verbatim. It's a bit more poetic, but it's what happened to me verbatim. But we've all got like a strong positive force and a strong negative force. We need them both. We need to unite them by the Christ energy in the centre, so that those three forces can create a fourth force. But if we let ourselves fall into fear, which I did this particular day, I didn't want to go to London. I didn't want to go to this meeting that I'd got. Oxford Street felt like a dark forest of stalking tourists. Everything felt like a threat, and everything was trying to stop me from telling stories, make me fearful of telling stories. It was trying to make me feel fearful of of sending out, healing stories. But I went there anyway, because I knew enough to know that if there's a lot of opposition, it means there's a lot of opportunity. So I would go down Oxford Street, and I'm suddenly overcome with this theological grace, this theological virtue, like a supernatural virtue. I just felt this overwhelming compassion for a man in Oxford Street, in a shop doorway, in one of the richest shopping malls in the world, and he had no socks and shoes on, no socks and shoes. And I had this tremendous, I'm embarrassed to say, I had this tremendous wrestle in my head. I haven't got the time or the coin or the appetite to stop. It's not my job. All of those things were going through my head. But all the same, I found myself walking into a store and buying him some clothes and bringing them back and saying to him, and having a conversation, which I won't tell you about because it's in the film. But you could look at it and just go, this is a story about being kind to homelessness. Homelessness is an evil, but as in the Thomistic sense of a privation, something that lacks wholeness. Or you can look at it as a modality to overcome evil with good, to overcome incompleteness with wholeness. So one tiny kind act to this rough sleeper turned Oxford Street from a dark forest of stalking tourists into flowing rivers of happy shoppers. I sanctified Oxford Street with one tiny act, just one tiny act. But the energies that were trying to stop me from doing that, all of the energies that were trying to stop me from doing that were necessary. They were part of these necessary opposite forces. I just needed to have the will force to bring them together, to create this fourth force of love, love, love. And as Rumi says, love is not a subtle argument. The door there is devastation. We have to devastate everything that's not love. then love has the power to sanctify everything, has the power to make everything complete, whether it's knowledge overcoming ignorance, or whether it's a panacea overcoming illness, or whether it's a kindness overcoming unkindness, or a kindness overcoming hate. All of those privations are there, and we need to tell our stories, but they need to be laced with vulnerable truth. I've got to have the vulnerable truth. The truth is, I didn't want to stop for this person. I was too busy. I got an important meeting, and it wasn't my job. But I had this overwhelming compassion to stop. When I stopped, I walked away. Afterwards, this film came to me, and this was nearly 5 years ago. And after the film came to me, another million words I've been writing for 5 years have come as a download from that one tiny act. 1,100,000 words about overcoming evil with good, overcoming ignorance with knowledge, overcoming hatred with kindness. Love is not a subtle argument. The door there is devastation. So we have to be courageous and turn into this dark side and not see it as an enemy, but see it as a necessary opposite force. So hopefully people will get whatever they need to get from it, but it can be just about feeding the homeless, or it can be or it can be about overcoming evil with good.
I mean, really, it's absolutely stunning. I can see why it's award-winning, and we are so grateful here at UK Health Radio that you've allowed us to play.
It's my honour. I'm honoured.
Really, and also right after the dreaded ad break, which we have to go to, I would love you to introduce it so that then people can listen to it. And actually, it's a different experience listening to it than watching it. And I urge you to listen to it first, and then after the show, go and watch it again, because it changes you from the inside out. And that's the whole point of this show. It wants to change you from the inside out for the better and point you in the direction of love. So right after the break, Jeff will be taking center stage to introduce his masterpiece, in my humble opinion, An Angel on Oxford Street.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage, or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Dreamtime. Jeff, please take center stage and introduce An Angel on Oxford Street.
I'll just read it from the blurb of the book, if you don't mind. An Angel on Oxford Street is a short animated film, which centres around the character Sol and his reluctant journey into Oxford Street, London, where he has an unexpected life-changing encounter with a rough sleeper, perhaps Christ in one of his many distressing disguises.
There's evil in the air. My mother doesn't want me travelling today. The devil is a roaming lion, she says. He's in the atmosphere. The papers have extolled so much bad news. Listen to this. They can't fit it all between the pages. The sword and the famine and the wild beasts and the plagues. They are bleeding into the margins and thundering out a warning. The four riders have been summoned. No wonder everyone's scared shitless to leave the house. According to the Fourth Estate, evil is crouching outside every open doorway. And if the end time is going to happen anytime soon, it'll likely be in our heathen capital. They kill tourists in London, you know. You, my blue-eyed son, this is my fretting mother again. You are 61 years old and you are a limping antelope on the edges of a fast-moving herd. If you have to go to London, if you really have to go, be careful. If the pale rider of Corona doesn't snatch the breath from your choking throat and the violent terrorist doesn't bomb you clean out of your trendy plimsolls, the immigrant fingersmith with his very sharp knife will carve you open and sell your vital organs as a delicacy on the dark web. What are you going to do about the evil? Half walking, half crawling down the six crooked highways of Oxford Street. Peak hour, weaving through a dark forest of stalking tourists who have rampaged the globe in order to scavenge a souvenir. I swerve a dark preacher whose Bible is wounded by hatred. Somewhere, the wailing song of a failed poet is beaten out of a wearied guitar. A hard rain is gonna fall. As the last judgment of melancholy bounces around my suite, I see him. Through the crowd. Under freezing nails of driving rain, encamped in a shop doorway. A death shroud of rags. I see his bare feet first. Naked feet, no shoes in the middle of the richest shopping mile in the world. No socks. Toes caked in the dirt of a 10-year pestilence, a large matted beard that could trigger a public health warning. I am stopped. My heart aches. Compassion. Unsolicited. And I know, I already know that I can't walk past this man. I cannot. I feel ashamed to be overdressed and overfed while this man, any man, is freezing and starving on any street in any capital in my country. I look at the time. 10 minutes to get to a meeting that is now 15 minutes adrift. And I don't have the time or the coin or the appetite to robe a stranger in fine garments or sauce him with enough fast food to beat away a slow death. I'm acknowledging the impossibility of my situation at the same time as my wandering boot heels walk me into a large clothing store, 5 stories high, and a country mile in the wrong direction. I am late, and the anxiety is a plague fire. Time is battering me. Before I know it, I'm in the longest queue in the world. With a pair of new shoes, with a hoodie, with a woolly hat and thermal socks that I don't have the paper for, that I don't have the time for. All I do have is a jury of 16 magic numbers who each testify that debt on the plastic is preferable to death on the pavement. You can't feed every hungry mouth in London. There's a man starving to death in the middle of 20 food outlets. A stranger's life is not your concern. Any man's death diminishes me. The queue to pay is 100 miles long and it's not moving and there are not enough checkouts and for one split second everything feels useless and my humanitarian urgency and naive folly and I nearly ditch the purchase and I very nearly run from the store and I almost race to my meeting. Apologies rehearsed, but I know that despite my first world cowardice, I am involved in mankind. I am involved.
I can't. I cannot ignore that. My conscience gains the winning hold and secures a tight strangle, and my mind taps a defeated submission and quiets to a still, and I think, fuck the meeting. And I breathe for the first time today. And the queue starts to shift, and tills mysteriously open, and suddenly I'm moving swift, Hermes in winged sandals down a Christian high street, the Magi bearing gifts for a throne who smiles at me beatifically, not like he's grateful, more like he's been expecting me. What's your name? I ask. Evil. Evil? He nods. My name is Evil. My mum jumps immediately to mind. What are you going to do about the evil? I'm going to overcome evil with good, mum. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to dress it and feed it and robe it in the armour of the good. I leave your man in his shop doorway abode with his new vestment and enough hard cash to buy a hot meal, and I pass unharmed and unhindered and unnoticed through the filling rivers of happy shoppers, through the shining brass of Christmas sparkle, through spice and myrrh, the sweet odour of sanctity. And if I make my meeting late, it is not noticed. And if my client is aggrieved, it is not mentioned. And whether I win the contract or not, it is of little importance. I came to London expecting to find evil in the air, only to discover instead an angel crouching outside an open doorway.
Kelly.
Oh my heavens. Jeff, I'm Kelly, by the way. Nice to meet you.
Hi.
I'm in tears over here. I can barely speak. Your story is so powerful. There's so many layers in this very short story, and I'm touched so deeply by the fact that this angel is named Evil.
Yes.
So there's that to talk about, how you so cleverly did that. We don't need to be afraid of evil. We just need to clothe it with kindness and good. But there's also this little piece, because earlier in the show, Teresa was talking to Margarita Mitchell Pollack about being a sensitive person. And I imagine a lot of sensitive people are listening right now. And sometimes it's overwhelming how much need there is.
Yeah.
And how do we know, how do we use our discernment to who to help and who to walk by?
It's very difficult. I mean, you can help everybody just by... But I help everybody just by saying a prayer when they walk past. It doesn't mean I've got to put money in the pocket. It means I've just got to notice them. I've got to look at them. I've got to recognize that that's my brother. That's my sister. That's my kid. I stopped outside Piccadilly once, and there's a young girl there. And I promise you, I saw all of my children through her. And I thought, how can I go to work and leave my own child? I took my gloves off. I put them on her hands because she couldn't move her hands. I felt this overwhelming love. So I just say to people, if you can't be nice, at least be neutral. And if you have the will, then serve everyone, even if it's just with a kind thought. Remember that your thoughts have a magnetic force. They are spirit. It's a literal spirit. And when it goes out there, if it comes through a negative filter, it's going to be an ill spirit. It will go out and it will come back again. So we just constantly put out kindness. We constantly put out love. And if there's a negative feeling rising up, then that gets churned up. That gets frame dragged into the nucleus of love, and it gets pushed out into the world. So we're constantly putting out these beautiful healing angels through our stories. And the main thing I'm called to do is tell the truth. Yeah, and no matter how ugly it feels, tell the truth. Because even if it's an ugly abuse, it becomes beautiful in the telling, because it becomes sanctified. We're as sick as our secrets, as they say.
Thank you.
You know, but Christ, or the Christ energy, is in all of those dark elements, and we can bring them into the center and churn them up. So just at least be neutral if you can't be kind.
Thank you. And Kelly, I wish you could all see Kelly's in tears, as we all are. Kelly, our recurring American dream. You're going to hear a lot more from her next year, best-selling author of Dream of Fasting. Thank you. And Margarita, I would just love you and Jeff to kind of close out this show, really, with your thoughts. Another highly sensitive soul speaking. It's just, I just got goosebumps. I'm going to shut up. Please, Margarita. Thank
you, Jeff. No, I bow down to a master at work there. You were born to be a writer, Jeff. You were born to bring stories to the mainstream and to transform people's lives with your words. You were put on this earth to do that quite clearly, and to show the darkness as well as the light. Which you do so well and so eloquently. I think a lot of people shy away from showing that darkness. And you bring those two elements together and make people face them.
Yeah, you've got to look at it, and you've got to, first of all, convert whatever's in you that, you know, you haven't found a resolution with, that needs to be converted. All of those blocks, all of those wounds, all of those abuses, all of those things we carry around. God says to Solomon, I exist temporarily in dark cloud. If you build me a temple, I will reside permanently in you. He was talking about physics 3,000 years ago. He was saying, if you have a darkness in you and you bring it into love, it will become love. What is it? Everything that's exposed to love will itself become love. We just have to have the courage to absorb 99% of it before it gives up its light. So we can start with ourselves. I always say to people, start with yourself. You know, convert what's negative in you, and then you can help other people. You can only help other people to the level you've helped yourself.
Wow, everyone, and that brings us reluctantly to the close of this magnificent Dream Power show. My heartfelt thanks, Margarita Mitchell-Polak, for sharing your brave, intuitive heart. Blessings also to Futuala for her shamanic insights, and to Kelly Sullivan Walden, our recurring American dreamer, whom you'll hear a lot more of in the new year. And of course, to Jeff Thompson for a powerful reminder that compassion often arrives in the most unexpected moments, especially at this time of year. Please go watch Angel on Oxford Street and spread the word. And wishing you all incredible dreams.